Welcome to Classics Now, the radio program of the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group. I'm Solomon Iverta, and I'm here with the mellifluous Mary Harper to discuss this month's selection, Oronoko by Aphra Behn.
Very interesting book and a fascinating life. This is not someone I had really heard of before, before we read this. She was in the 17th century. She was born around 1640, really early, and she made her living as a writer. She was perhaps the first English woman to do this, and one of the first women in any place to do this. She made her own way as a writer, which is pretty remarkable for the time. We don't really know much about her until the age of 27. There's not any record that we can point to, so we're not sure where she was born. We're not sure who her parents were. All we know is that she definitely spied for Charles II.
A spy, yes.
Yes, right, during the Anglo-Dutch War. Unfortunately, Charles, being not a very nice monarch, didn't pay her. And as a result, she had married and her husband had died, which had left her already in debt. And then she was in debt from trying to be a spy and couldn't pay any of her bills and got thrown into debtor's prison.
Ouch.
And so that was the point where she said, okay, I'm not relying on anybody but me. And she started out as a playwright, and she was pretty successful. She wrote 19 plays. She was also a poet. She wrote novels. She wrote short stories. She was a translator. She did just about everything to try and keep the meat on the table.
And fortunately for us, we have this this edition of Oronoko, which is a story of an African prince who is sold to slavery and to Suriname. So quite a tragic tale.
It is. It's a romance. It's a tragedy. You can see that she was definitely aiming to entertain the audience. Although it isn't directly an anti-slavery book, because that sort of attitude really hadn't cropped up yet. People hadn't thought about it that way. But there are some really strong sections of the book where she just comes down on the way people were treated by both the English and the Dutch. It's a fascinating book. This prince is obviously a very, very special person. He's extraordinary in leadership. He's well educated because he's met a Frenchman who's tutored him, and he speaks many languages. One of the contradictions of the book, which is interesting, is that of course he also sold slaves, because that was a tradition back in Africa at the time, is if you conquered someone, their people became slaves. But it was a different, she writes in here that there was not the kind of poor treatment. Now, we don't know what there was, but she compares the treatment that they get at the hands of the English and the Dutch to being treated like dogs. It's a very interesting book. A lot of it, the beginning, is about his romance with the beautiful Imoinda, which is foiled right at the beginning because his grandfather, who was the king, decides that Imoinda would be a nice addition to his harem. And, of course, you just don't say no to the king at the loss of life. So even though she's secretly already married to Oronoko, she has to go. One of the things that's very interesting about Aphra Behn is she's pretty racy for her time.
Sure.
She tells you about how they feel sexually about each other, although today, I mean, it would just pass over. You wouldn't even notice it because, you know, we're so used to X-rated stuff. But back then, you know, just even talking about this sort of thing was kind of outside there.
Yeah, so this is the first half of the book takes place in Africa and understands all the love story and intrigue of the royal court in Africa, and then there's a change and a switch.
Right, and what happens is that this slave ship owner actually tricks Oronoko and his group into getting on the ship to have dinner, supposedly, and they have this wonderful dinner, and then, of course, he has a little too much to drink, and they put him in chains, and they sail for Suriname. Well, right off the bat, he stops eating, and everybody else who's been captured on the boat stops eating, too. So all of a sudden it's like, well, we're going to end up with a whole bunch of dead people if this goes on. So they get him out, and he's, you know, he says, you know, I see no reason to live if you're going to do this to me. And they say, all right, well, you know, we made a mistake. You're obviously not the sort of person that, you know, ought to do this to, and so we'll let you go. And so he begins eating again, and all the others begin eating again. And of course, he gets to Suriname, and he's put on the block along with everybody else. And he reacts. He says, he understood English pretty well, and being wholly unarmed and defenseless, it was in vain to make any resistance. He only beheld the captain with a look all fierce and disdainful, upbraiding him with eyes that forced blushes on his guilty cheeks. He only cried in passing over the side of the ship, "Farewell, sir. 'Tis worth my sufferings to gain a true knowledge both of you and your gods by whom you swear." And desiring those that held him to forbear their pains, and telling him he would make no resistance, he cried, "Come, my fellow slaves, let us descend and see if we can meet with more honor and honesty in the next world we shall touch upon." So he's already learning that their word is not their bond.
Yeah, it's betrayal after betrayal once he gets to Suriname, and the tragedy falls.
Right. He keeps believing them. They keep telling him that, you know, oh, it's a mistake. He discovers that Imawinda has been transported there too.
His wife is actually also a slave, and
right.
She finds her there. So it's very much the romance. The intrigue continues. This was an entertaining book for
it was. It was. It's a good story. And so they keep telling him, though, that, you know, we'll get you back. We'll take you back. You know, the next ship that goes out, we'll put you back on it. And of course, they keep lying to him. Because he's too valuable. And so finally, he foments an uprising of the slaves. He says, having singled out the men, he made a harangue to them of the miseries and ignominies of slavery, counting up all their toils and sufferings under such loads, burdens, and drudgeries as were fitter for beasts than men, senseless brutes than human souls. He told them it was not for days, months, or years, but for eternity. There was no end of their misfortunes. They suffered not like men who might find a glory in fortitude and oppression, but like dogs that loved the whip and the bell and fawned the more they were beaten. So, you know, although it's not an anti-slavery book, there are elements in there. One point they go to see the local indigent Indians, and she says they are treated very badly by the Dutch, and then they respond very well to these kind of treatments. There's a lot of prejudice in this book. It was at the time, you know, that's the way things were. And she was a monarchist. She believed that, you know, your word should be your bond, even though the king, I mean, it's kind of a parallel here because the king didn't hold his word with her either. But she was part of the Restoration Theater after the theaters were closed during the Cromwell era. And she came back and was quite popular in theater. And although this book was published a year before her death, and it wasn't wildly popular at first, but Thomas Southern made a play out of it, which really got it to be known, and then it became a much better seller. She's mentioned by Virginia Woolf in A Room of One's Own, and Virginia Woolf says, "All women together ought to let flowers fall upon the grave of Aphra Behn, for it was she who earned them the right to speak their minds." And indeed, she was one of the first female playwrights, and after her, there were several more. So she did pave the way.
I keep telling folks this is the reason we read the classics, is because in our group, we find things that maybe we would not have ever stumbled upon, and really an engaging read, and I was turning the pages, wanting to find out what happened next. So what do we have for next month, Mary?
Next month, the group will be reading Goethe's Elective Affinities, and I will be away on vacation, and so you will be joined by one of our founding members, Lance Hardy, to discuss it next month.
A special treat, yes, to have Lance with us. So read along at home or try to join our group. This is the North Coast Great Book Discussion Group, and this radio program is called Classics Now. Thanks for listening, and have a classic day.